And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty.
Welcome back to 7:55 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic. I'm with my co-host Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's up, Eric? How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Dude, I was just thinking, this was a classic example of when people say that's baseball, because the Braves lost 13-4 to the Cubs on Saturday and gave up 6 home runs, right? 24 hours later, the Braves beat the Cubs 13-4 and hit 6 homers, 4 in the first inning.
Yeah.
I mean, I hit 5 homers, I think. 4 in the first inning, though, against Kyle Hendricks. So, is there another sport where you can imagine a turnaround like that? Two teams, obviously football players, you're not going to play back-to-back days, but basketball, for instance, it'd be like an NBA team beating another NBA team by 40, losing the next day by 40 to the same NBA team. I mean, it's only in baseball, and I think it's for one reason, obviously. It's the pitcher. So much depended on the pitcher.
Yeah, and it's just hard to hit, you know. I mean, I felt like the offense was due to explode at some point because they've struggled a little bit this year. But, yeah, I don't see too many other sports where you can blow somebody out that is a much better team than you. You know, it just doesn't really happen too much.
Right. Right, because even like football, I mean, the quarterback obviously runs the show and everything, but the game's not entirely dependent on him like it is in baseball. You know, the game's in a pitcher's hand in baseball to such a large degree.
Yeah, and I don't know if, like, as a quarterback, you can just not have it that day.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, you can make adjustments and call different plays, but if you're a starting pitcher and you don't have it, I mean, you still got to keep pitching. You know, you just can't start handing it off and then trying to figure things out. You know, you can throw junk balls and stuff, but
yeah.
I mean, I thought, you know, Hendrick, he's a great example of how hard it is to pitch with 86 mile an hour fastball. Yeah. You know, he was off by a tick yesterday and he gives up 4 homers in the first. He kind of settled in a little bit after that, but still, you know, it's just, it makes me appreciate what he normally does, because that's what he's up against every time. If he's not perfect at 86 to 88, he's going to get raped.
Like Tomlin.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate what those guys do, because when I got down into the high 80s with my fastball, I was out of the game in 2 years.
Yeah, it's like, and if a good pitcher doesn't have, like, if he has like 3 pitches and one of them he doesn't have that day at all, like his breaking balls is not working, his changeups, he doesn't have any feel for it. Tom Brady didn't come out and say, I couldn't throw the deep ball today. I just, you know, I couldn't complete a deep pass, period.
I couldn't hand the ball off. I didn't have it. You know, I had to call passes every play. It just doesn't, it's just a different game.
Crossing route today. It just wouldn't work.
Wasn't there.
But as soon as the game was over, actually before the game was over, most of the Braves discussion, once the outcome was decided, which it was decided by the time Ronald Acuna left the game in the 4th inning. So the whole talk turned to him and how serious his injury is. He left the game after the top of the 4th inning with what the Braves called at the time lower abdominal pains. And afterwards, Snit said he's got an abdominal strain. I mean, this is still a very general diagnosis, because it could be something really minor. And knowing Acuna, he could be back in the lineup. I'm not going to be at all surprised if he's back in the lineup Tuesday at Yankee Stadium. They're off today.
Not one bit.
But at the same time, if it's just barely a little bit above that minimal, I could see them holding him out too, only because they're off today, play 2, then off Thursday. And if you want to be really cautious with your superstar, you know, one of the 2 players you really just cannot do without, I could see them holding him out till Friday. if there's any chance of it, you know, of this worsening. But again, if he says, I'm fine, if he comes there tomorrow and says, oh, fine, it just hurt. I could see them playing him Tuesday, but we'll see. I mean, I say that, and then they could ask tomorrow he's on the IL, because if it's worse than it looked, but there are reasons to think it's not that bad. One, he was pointing to his, like, his belly button area, not the sides, not the oblique and the intercostal, which is where on the sides where you're running all that trouble.
Guys do obliques, they can't move. Like when Billy Wagner did his, he could barely stand up after.
Right. You know,
I mean, he dove into home a couple plays later.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's an oblique or intercostal, you know, you're out because that torque. I mean, he has so much torque in his swing.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like Tatis. That's why I was shocked that Tatis got back in 10 days after the subluxation of his shoulder.
He doesn't look, he's still guarding it. He's not letting that hand off the bat anymore. He's keeping both hands on.
But then the other thing that the reason Acuña stayed in the game, obviously, after the trainer came out and talked to him. So that was a good sign. Usually they bring a guy out if it's like Ozzy did, you know, if he can't convince them he's fine, they bring him out. But he stayed in the game. And then moments later, he scores on a sack fly and he does his usual hands first slide, which I know makes people cringe because they're like, why does he always slide? Head first, hand first, however you want to call it. I call it hands first because he's not leading with his head. He's leading with his hands. But that's why he always slides. And he didn't even have to slide on this play, and he slid. So I'm thinking if his belly's really hurting that bad, I would think he might resort to sliding with his feet for once, and he didn't. Or even
not trying sliding.
Trying to score standing up, which some guys do sometimes when they should slide. But he didn't. He dove. And they got him out of the game at that point. But I think it seemed
to be. Yeah, well, if you say it hurts and then you're diving all over the place, you know, they're like, shit, we got to get him out just to protect him.
That's how I took it, as they're blowing his team out. He's playing as hard as ever. He's belly flopping everywhere. He's probably going to be on the bases again. Let's just get him out of the game and make sure this is okay. And Snit said they couldn't get the test. There's a type of test they wanted to have done, medical test, and they couldn't get it done on Sunday night because it's Sunday night. You're in Chicago, and they're catching a flight right afterwards to New York. So they couldn't send him to the hospital because they'd have to wait. And they said, we're off tomorrow. We'll just get this done in New York. So they're getting it done in New York today. We're not expecting an update because it's an off day, and that's really, the Braves usually do not provide off day updates. And it could be late in the afternoon for all I know. I don't know when this exam is. I just was told today there probably wouldn't be an update till tomorrow. So,
well, it gives him more time anyway, you know, to see how he feels for an extra day.
Right. Right. So we'll see. I mean, I obviously, let's say worst case scenario, and it is a real strain, and he's just a tough guy and was able to continue. If he goes on the IL, he's carried this offense for most of 2 weeks. I guess the good sign would be. This was the first game where they really did a lot without him. I mean, he haven't had another big day all year without him being a part of it. They hit four homers in the first inning, and the most shocking thing might have been he wasn't one of them.
Yeah, that he didn't do anything, you know.
Yeah. He went 0-for-2 with a walk, and they had 14 hits, season high, and 13 runs. So that's if you want to look at a positive, that would be it. And Ozuna had three hits. Heredia had a career day, which is a great sign because he's filling in for Inciarte, and he stepped up big time. Two home runs, three hits, two home runs, a grand slam, first of his major league career, six RBIs. I don't want to take shots at the center fielders, but they had zero homers and zero RBIs in 15 games.
Yeah.
He gets two homers and six RBIs in one game.
he needed that to get going too. I look at it that way, that with them riding Acuña so hard, if they didn't have the day yesterday, you might be kind of a little worried about it. But for me, the offense has been due to have a big game and blow up, because they did this type of stuff all the time last year. You know, they had a lot of big games last year, and they really haven't been hitting. I think everybody else is primed to fill in for Acuña if he is hurt. But I'm not too worried about him, because like you said, if it was really killing him after the first dive back to first base, you're not doing again the same motion again.
Yeah.
You know? So it's probably just something minor. And a lot of times with young guys, they don't know the difference between something hurting and an injury. So, I mean, things can just be kind of hurting, you know, like you could tweak something minor or hamstring, but when something pops or tears, you know, you have to go through those things to know it. So I think he's learning to at least alert the team and let them know when something doesn't feel right. But if it was an oblique, he wouldn't have ran around the bases.
Yeah. Snit mentioned that, you know, it's probably something he's never felt before because he had a look kind of like curiosity as much as concern. He's standing there, the trainer come out and he's kind of pointing to his belly going, you know, it almost looked like, you know, I don't know what this is, you know.
And think about having a body that can hit, you know, opposite field homers 450 feet and you can dunk and you have a cannon, you know, I mean, that body's functioning well. He probably doesn't have too many injuries, you know, or little things going on. Everything's working for him most of the time.
Right. He's like a Lamborghini though. And he might have just something really small that, he feels it.
So. Yeah. Probably feels everything that's not right.
Yeah.
Like Luis Avalon had never had a cramp before. You remember that?
And we thought he'd been assassinated.
I thought he ripped his hamstring off the bone and got shot.
People were looking on the roof of the grandstands to see if there was a sniper up there. The way he went down.
Yeah, it's cramp. So I mean, I had
never seen something like that in my life.
First cramp of his life. He thought he was dying.
First cramp is scary.
Yeah.
I got my like sleeping, you know, my leg cramped up, woke me up, it's spasming, and you're like, what is going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of looked more like what Acuna was feeling. Like, I don't know what's going on here, but not, he didn't look like he was in a lot of pain.
And maybe he had a spasm in his stomach. You know, he did some serious workouts in the offseason, you know, a lot of abdominal stuff. And maybe he's so ripped down there, you know, that you could spasm there. Just like you can in other muscles.
Yeah.
That could have been. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out. But it's you don't want him hurt. I know that. But it's not the most alarming thing you can see.
That's the understatement of the year. You don't want him hurt.
You do not want him hurt.
It's such a start. You'd hate for it to be even interrupted by 10 days.
Yeah, and then he's got to get going again.
Yeah.
You know, when a guy's on the tear he's on, you want him to ride it out.
Historic type start. I mean, he's leading. Yeah. He's a major league home run and OPS leader. He's in the top three in like everything, you know. You would hate to see it interrupted. And a shot at 40-40 and all that, which is, you know, not as important as the team stuff. But still, this team can't really function at a high, high level without him, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, leading off. He's just so – Freddie's reigning MVP. But you could argue that Acuna as the leadoff guy is the guy you can't do without for 10 days.
Yeah.
You know, both of them are obviously clearly hugely important, but Acuna's. So last night, Ozuna had three hits, which for him is a great sign because he's really done not much anything so far.
Yeah.
He had three hits. A couple other guys had two. I mean, it was a big night for the offense. So if it wasn't for the Acuna thing, you'd have just been ecstatic over the whole thing for the Braves because they, like you said, they've been waiting for a day like this. And the funny thing is after the Cubs 6-homer, 13-run game the day before, Snickers said, I said, have you been, you know, is your offense still capable of doing something like that? He goes, absolutely. They're waiting for that to have a game just like that themselves. He said, we could do the same thing. 24 hours later, they did the same thing.
Yeah.
Four homers in the first inning, you know.
It's a matter of time. I mean, last week we were looking at all the OPSs in the 400s and batting average in the hundreds. You know, that's not who this team is. But yeah, it's hard to put that into perspective this early on when you've only gotten that small sample size. But it's a long year, and they're going to be who they are.
It's funny how fast that can change. You know, they were talking about all those OPS. They had OPSs around 400 or lower. You know, a bunch of guys. Yeah. And it's so early in the season that those tick up in a heartbeat, you know. I mean, you still got guys alarmingly low, but not like it was at all. I mean, Acuna, he's hitting 419 with a 1373 OPS, 16 games into this. One-tenth of the season gone, he's hitting 419 with a 1373 OPS.
He goes 2 for 5 right now, and his average goes down.
14 extra base hits, almost an extra base hit a game, dude.
Yeah.
Almost as many walks as strikeouts, 9 walks, 10 strikeouts, 7 homers in 16 games. I mean, that's on pace for 70 homers. On pace for 30 at stolen bases. So you got to pick up the stolen base pace. Freddie Freeman, he's up a little bit. He's up to 232, but his OPS is 930. You know, his OPS is like normal because he's slugging 536 and his and OBP, even if he's hitting 232, you'll take the OBP as 394. That's almost normal for Freddie.
Yeah, he's got 14 well, with Azuna walks. Not hitting, though, he's not going to get a lot to hit because that's just how it is. But if Azuna heats up, then you got to at least pick your poison.
How about Freddie with 13 hits and 14 walks?
Yeah.
14 walks to six strikeouts. That's a special player there that people will fear. Darno, he's done okay, but not much at all.
He'll hit.
He'll hit. You know he'll hit. Dansby, he's ticking up slowly, but he's still only at 203 with a 620 OPS. But again, these were OPSs that were at 400 less than a week ago.
Yeah.
He's 620. Ozzie, he was under 400. He's still only hitting 157, but his OPS is up to 615. He's missed the last two games, got hit high in the calf Friday. That looked painful. It was, he's taken a beating for about three games. He fouled off a couple of pitches on that same leg and foot. Then he got hit with a slider up the ninth inning, high in the calf. It looked like a knee until you look really close. Yeah. And realized it was a calf. After Snit said calf, I looked close again and I saw it was high on the calf. So he's been out a couple of games, but they think he could be back Tuesday. They just wanted to be careful with him. But he tried to shake it off, went to first base, and he's a tough little dude, but he got to first base and he's like, I can't even walk, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just tightening up too much. So he came out and Adrianza, I think it's pronounced air. It's not the way it's spelled. Adrianza has really played well in his absence. And Adrianza had a big night last night. He hit a bomb. He's got, he's ticking up. Yeah, he's doing what he did in spring training. Basically, he's doing exactly what they want from a bench guy like that. Marcelo Zuna, he's ticking up slowly. He's at 230, 607 OPS. Again, he was like 3-something OPS a week ago.
Yeah.
Still only has one homer, but he's got 8 RBIs. Austin Riley, still not doing much. 213 with a 534 OPS. Got one RBI. He's really got to get going. They need a lot more from him, obviously. I just want to see what Adrianza is doing. Adrianza, after hitting that amazing spring training that he forced his way on the roster, basically, he is at right now. He's hitting 333. He's only had 21 at bats, but he's hitting 333 with 1,095 OPS. Basically doing what he did in spring training, but he hit 400 in spring training. But he's already got two homers, a triple and a double, and 21 at bats. I mean, this guy is a better player than he was. I mean, he's probably at his peak that he was with the Twins, but they obviously would have brought him back if they thought he was going to do this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, this is what you want on utility. This is a true super utility. We kind of throw that name around too much with Camargo because he hadn't been really super much of the last couple of years, but this is right now is a super utility type guy. But Ender, you know, the shame with Ender's injury is that, you know, and I've criticized him as much as anybody, and I will happily admit that he was playing so much better. He got an opportunity with Pache injured, and Pache's been pretty dreadful. He looks a little overmatched at times, but Pache's injury has allowed Ender to get playing time, or did allow him to get playing time. Before Ender, again with the hamstring injury, pulls up going between second and third on Friday, It was clear at the time that it was a hamstring. Turns out that's exactly what it was. He came out of the game. He's on the IL. You just never know with Ender how long these are going to linger, but it could be out for a while. But the shame of it was the guy was starting to hit. I mean, he was hitting 294, had 5 hits, 17 at bats, and was showing signs of life. So the 368 OBP, I mean, it would have been great if he could have kept that up while Pache was out. And Ender would have stayed in the lineup for a while. So that's a shame that he's out, but the other thing is they're nice to show some depth to be able to stick a guy in there and get some production from like they did last night. They made a big point of adding some guys, you know, a lot of non-roster invitees like Guillermo Heredia, you know, it's a former Met, been with a couple other teams, and and really stepping up and making the most of his opportunity last night with two homers. Just a career type day. And it's exactly what they needed with both their center fielders out. So, but anyway, showing some signs of life, a lot of guys, and it's long overdue. They've been 2 weeks. They've been kind of trying to keep their heads above water, and it could be a lot worse. Could be the Yankees. I mean, everybody, you know, talked about the Yankees, and every year it seems like we go into the season, everybody's talking about the Yankees. The Yankees are spending money. The Yankees are doing this. The Yankees are doing that. The Yankees are in last place, you know, and everybody in New York is ripping them, and rightfully so. So I saw a great quote from somebody the other day. It said, when's the last time the Knicks were playing better than the Yankees? Because they are. The Knicks are, and the Hawks right there in playoff teams. And meanwhile, the Braves and the Yankees were in last place. The Braves are now out of last place after last night's win. So Yankees, dregs of the AL East right now. And the Red Sox, who nobody predicted to do anything, have been riding atop the division for most of the first 2 weeks. So it's so unpredictable. It's so early. But baseball, man, everybody, this team and that team is going to be so good, and they're not. And teams we write off annually continue to be good. So we'll see. We're only 1/10 of the way in, but so far the Yankees have been dreadful, man.
Yeah, it's hard not to put any weight into what you're seeing because it's all you're seeing. But yeah, you know, you just have to remember that it's 162, and nobody, I mean, if I asked you what the standings were after 10 games last year, which is, you know,
right,
quite a bit of the season, nobody knows. You know, I mean, it's all about where you're at the end.
And last year it was important because last year you could not afford to get off to a bad start in a 60 game season. You couldn't fall five back with two or three weeks in, and because you were in a hole.
Yeah.
This year it's nothing to be 3 or 4 games back, 1/10 of the. Yeah. I mean, you can make that up. You know,
you got all year, and it's nothing to be hitting a .127 either.
Yeah.
Last year, if you were hitting a .127 after 10 games, you know, that was a sixth of your season.
Yeah. And then there was Freddie Freeman, who wasn't doing anything for one quarter of the season last year, 15 games. But yeah, most people aren't Freddie Freeman.
No.
Because
Yelich never got out of that hole last year.
No, he did not.
Wonder how he's doing this year.
He's off to a good start, but he just got hurt. He's off to a great start.
He also couldn't afford to get hurt last year.
His lower back again. Yeah. The team that's not disappointing, that we're so used to being disappointment every year and being hyped and never living up to it, the Mets. The Mets are off to a fast start, man. And that's included not giving any support as usual to DeGrom and his game. They're 7-4, man. They're 4-1 at home, 7-4. They got a one game lead over the Phillies in the division. You know, everybody in the division is kind of living up to expectations, except the Braves and the Nats. A lot of people thought the Braves and the Nats are the best two teams in the division, and they're Braves 7-9. The Nats are 5-8. Part of that's a COVID start, but you know, Strasburg's back on the IL, man.
Yeah, I worried about him, you know, especially when they were choosing between him and Rendon.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what you worried about was the injuries. The Mets, man, you know, I think culture's a big deal, and there was just something about that vibe there, even when I was there, that you just felt like, you know, they were going to Mets it. And getting new ownership, starting over from the top down, could be a big change for them. Stroman looks good. They didn't have him last year. DeGrom's going to be DeGrom. You know, I mean, if the team's healthy and they got the talent, it's just always been kind of just an underperforming thing that you didn't really have an explanation for other than they were doing what they'd been doing.
Yeah, I think the top down is really important in this case, because the new owner came in, made it clear he'd spend money, and made it clear that, you know, the past doesn't mean anything. I don't care what happened here. We're doing things. We're not going to be this poor stepchild to the Yankees anymore. You know, I got more money than the Yankees owners do, and I'll spend it. So when the players see that, it's different when you change GMs, when you bring in a former agent to be the GM and you expect to change the culture. This guy changed everything, you know, from top down. They've changed everything. They got Alderson, they got all this stuff. And I know they got the ugly incident going with the
former GM, right?
Right, right. But that doesn't relate to this team and how they're playing on the field. I mean, that might be an ugly thing on the side that they have to take care of PR-wise, but it doesn't affect the players.
No.
And the players are playing with a new freedom and confidence and knowing their owner is going to take care of stuff and spend money if they need to. And Yeah, they've actually changed the culture for once, which they never did before when they made all the different moves and kind of moved the furniture around before, but they didn't change the deck chairs in the Titanic, but they didn't change the inner core of it, and they still have bad ownership.
Yeah,
not anymore.
And that all filters down. You know, I mean, it's whatever pressure the ownership's putting on the GM, how they're treating them. You know, it's just a tendency to treat the people below you like that and be just as frustrated with them. But, you know, I mean, it definitely affects your mindset as a player, especially if you get to like the trade deadline or something. And you know, maybe you could get John Lester, but he's going to cost too much. And, you know, no offense to Paul Mahomes, but Paul Mahomes comes walking through those doors. You know, you're getting this big trade acquisition you're looking at. And when you feel like your ownership or your GM doesn't give you that piece you need, you know, it's kind of a downer. But the stuff they did going out and getting Lindor and then already signing him, you know, I mean, it affects the mindset of the team. Like, you know, if you need that piece, you're going to get it.
Yeah, and by the same token, and I think that coupled with the Yankees' terrible start, I think that's really helped the Mets too, because they're like, this is our chance, man. We're the top of the back page right now. We can be the team right now. We're the best team in the city, and let's take advantage. Let's run with this. You know, it's not like in the past where they're just waiting for things to crumble, something to go wrong.
Yeah,
it's different. So,
and you feel big time being a New York team. You know, I mean, when you're getting all that hype, you always get more media attention. You're going to be on more of the highlights. I mean, that definitely boosts your confidence, especially when things are going your way. It's more pressure when you're not. But
yeah, they're 4-1 at home. I know the crowds are loud there, even though they're small. Their fans are loud, waiting to win. So,
well, they feel like, you know, they feel like it's a fresh start too. You know, they got a fresh reason to believe. So I'm sure they're bringing more energy.
The Phillies, by the same token, they've changed the culture there a lot too. Last year with the manager, getting a new man, a real manager, and bringing in Dombrowski, man.
Yeah.
Dombrowski's a winner, dude. Say what you will about Dombrowski, he's a winner. You know, he might have made some bad trades and all because he's ballsy and he's aggressive as hell, but he's a winner. I mean, he's won everywhere he's been, including the Marlins with a World Series in 97, you know. He won the Tigers a couple of pennants, and he obviously won with the Red Sox. And he ain't going somewhere to lose in his last stop probably of his career. So they made moves to fix the bullpen right away. It's not fixed, but the back end is a lot better for sure. They put out a lot of money to Breeson Realmuto. Bryce Harper is off to a good start. He's playing like Bryce Harper should.
Yeah.
So there are no pushovers, and everybody waiting for them to crumble. I don't know if it's going to happen. You know, they got good starters. They got a couple of three good starters. They're 7-2 at home right now, and that could be a real tough place to play when they're playing well. Their fans, too.
They'll toughest.
Yeah.
That's a tough place to play when they're doing well.
They'll boo their guys, but they are also really behind them when they're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough – that's a tough bullpen to warm up in. You know, because you're right by the fans there, and there's a beer garden back there. I mean, that's one of the toughest pens to warm up in. You know, I mean, it definitely gets you amped up. But back when they had, you know, they were on that tear and they were selling out every game, I don't know if there was a tougher place to play. You just always felt like they were going to put something together. But, you know, with Philly, I kind of question Harper's leadership ability. I think we talked about this in the past, that he hasn't really won, even though he's had the talent, and leaves Washington. They win a World Series. But he's playing well.
I think Realmuto is important for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having another guy that's an established star, a veteran presence, you know, that takes some of the attention away from him, and kind of it's not about bullshit about wearing acute cleats, you know, in the warm up line. Realmuto is just a hardcore play. He's there to play.
Yeah.
You know, let Harper do all that pretty boy stuff, you know, with the appealing to the mascot and all that. But I think when he sees Realmuto's here just to play ball, I think that's got to be good probably for Harper. I think that can rub off on him having another guy like that.
Yeah, it's definitely really good for you to see guys that don't care about all the distractions and the outside stuff going on. You know, I mean, you see your minor league guys come up all the time, and the first thing they're worried about is if they got the right colored cleats for the game and all these little tiny things. You're like, dude, your head's in the wrong place. You got to try to get Acuña out tonight.
And I know Baum has had a couple of really bad games here in Atlanta with the errors. So the Braves fans maybe haven't seen the best of him, but he's a good player, dude.
Yeah.
He's a hell of a player. Yeah. He can hit.
Yeah.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Biggest surprise in the National League, besides the Braves in last place, but I think we've seen them data. We know how fast that could change. But I think from a national picture, looking at the division, the biggest surprise is the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah,
I mean their offense has been Jesus. They're 7-2 at home, which is no shocker considering that ballpark, Great American Small Park. 2-4 on the road. They're getting some. I mean, their offense is scary. When they get clicking, they're rolling, man.
Almost any offense is scary in that park. But,
yeah.
You know, that gives you confidence even when you go on the road after you had a great homestand. You know, I mean, I think that a lot of times those parks that are really tough to hit in, guys take that on the road too and try to do too much on the road. You get your homers at home, you know, you go on the road and just hit.
And I think if anything, the first 2.5 weeks has solidified the Dodgers status as – the best team in the league, man. I mean, they're the best team.
Padres are going to give them a run for their money, but I think they're a year or two back.
I do too. At least a year. I mean, we'll see what happens in the offseason, but the Padres are not ready right now. Hell, the Giants are ahead of the Padres right now just because winning percentage points. But
they played a great series out there
this weekend.
Those were good games.
That game was on TV that ended at 2:30. I stayed up for the entire thing because it's like you're committed. You know, you get to extra innings and you're like, I'm not turning it off now. And that was a great game.
Yeah.
What have you thought? Were you as shocked as I was that Tatis got back in 10 days from a subluxation of the shoulder and then homers in the first game?
I was shocked he homered because his swing's different.
Yeah.
He's not letting go of that top hand staying on the bat now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's still swinging hard, but he definitely had some – he's got some timidness to his swing. Some
damage there?
Yeah. I just think he's just guarding it still, which – I mean, that's your call as a player, whether you want to go out there at 70 or 80% or go out at 100. But a series against the Dodgers, you know, I mean, it's a good sign that your guy is trying to get back out there as soon as possible. But he looked different to me. His swing didn't look the same.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but those are the type of subluxation injury where doctors will tell you, okay, you can keep playing with this. It's eventually going to get to the point because it'll happen again and again. It'll get stretched out, the ligaments, and eventually you have to go in and tighten it up surgically, right? Isn't that what happens with that?
I think so. I mean, I know Bellinger did it, and
yeah,
he came back swinging just as hard as ever, and he's been fine. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that injury too well, but
yeah.
I just
watching him. Those guys'
shoulders
pop out. They pop out. They'll keep popping out. It might not be again this year. Might be two or three times this year. And then in the offseason, the doc says it's going to keep happening unless we're going to tighten up the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that's the impression I get. The people are saying he's back, but it's still hurt.
Or he's just aware of it. You know, I mean, I'm sure it hurts pretty bad when you do it. It looked like it did. And you can't.
Knowing it could happen again.
Knowing it's there, knowing it could happen again, and you can't help but guard it in a sense. But that's kind of what's so tough about the majors is – I mean, he's hitting in the hundreds, but if you're not 100%, even the best players can all of a sudden be playing at a AAA level.
And the majors is just relentless because you're playing
every day.
You don't have a week to – I mean, football players feel like they were in a car wreck. They all describe it as it's like being in a violent car wreck. You wake up Monday and they don't practice. You know, you can't practice Monday. They have the day off. A lot of times they don't practice Tuesday, but they have walkthroughs or they have meetings, I mean. So it takes them 2 or 3 days to even, because when they have to play like football players are pissed in the NFL when they have to play Sunday and they have those schedules where they have to play again Thursday for TV or whatever.
Oh, like, I bet they feel miserable.
Oh, God. Can you imagine putting your body through that?
I mean, the starting pitcher gets 4 days off.
Yeah. But they have a week to recover, football players do. Even recovering from a violent car crash, by, you know, late in the week, you're going, all right, let's get it together and play again. Baseball, you're like, you're playing again. Sometimes 12 hours later, you know.
Usually, and if you do a little injury that needs 4 or 5 days off, you might have to go on the DL in baseball because you got to fill that spot. You can't afford to have a guy sit out that long. Football, right. At least you got that time to kind of nurse it and try to get it feeling to 1%. And then that one day you push it and you know you're going to get some more rest. But baseball is every day.
And I think that the 10-day IL helped with that because with 15, they're always teams have always got forced to make that decision. Like, he's one of our best players. We can't do without him. So if he's going to be out 4 or 5 days, we're not going to put him on the DL. They're going to wait. So they go shorthanded for 4 or 5 games. And then if the guy's not ready, then you got to make the decision then. All right, do we retroactive and put him, you know, or do we can't keep going without a, you know, shorthanded on a 25-man roster, but he's so important. So you're always weighing that. And it was a little easier to make those calls when it's 10-day.
Way easier as a player too. You know, I mean, if before you even walk into the training room, especially if you're struggling or feel like you're just getting hot, mm-hmm. you know, before you walk into that training room, you're thinking, you know, if this is a big deal, I got to go on the 15 day. So now you're out 2 weeks and you missed two weeks, you know, it might take you another 2 weeks to get locked back in again. So when it's only 10 days and they tell you, you're going to be out 5 or 6, a 10 day is not a bad thing. But when it's 15 and it's 5 or 6, you know, that's an extra 10 days. That you don't want to miss. So I think it makes it easier for players to be more upfront with their injuries too.
Yeah, 15 day, that's a tenth of the season.
Yeah.
And then you got to get back into it. 10 day, maybe you're only going to be out 4 or 5, and then you can play, you can go up and play, you know, can't do triple A games, play at the alternate site for 3 or 4 games. So you really only miss about 5 days. You can maybe jump right back in and pick up where you left off. But 15 days, it's
tough.
Statistically, it's hard to miss a tenth of the season. Then you miss any more, then you start moving to a fifth of the season. So, that's the big surprise to me was the Reds in the NL. Over in the AL, obviously the biggest surprise is the Red Sox. I mean, everybody had them last in the division, the Yankees winning the division. It's flip-flopped, you know? I mean, can the Red Sox keep it up? I don't know. But, I mean, today they just hammered Lucas Giolito in the first inning of the Patriots
game. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Jeez, I saw it. Yeah,
it's so early. There's so much time for it all to level out.
How can you explain, though, these pitchers that have these outings, like really good pitchers like Lucas Giolito, Max Fried had his. Hendricks, you explained that. It's a guy that throws 88, so if he's a little off, it can happen. But a guy like Giolito or a Fried, they didn't have a start even a fourth that bad last year, you know. Then you come out, you just don't have it to that degree. You're just getting up like bombs.
Well, they played a doubleheader yesterday too, so you don't want to take him out too quick when he doesn't have it. So you're more likely to give up more. But he gave it a lot up in the first. I mean, that's what I was talking about.
Start too.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, that's
tough. But that's tough for the hitters, you know. I mean, especially they played like two games yesterday. It's hard for everybody, but. That's the thing, man, is it's like some days you just don't have it. And I appreciate the guys that go out and get shelled and get it over with quick versus the guys that nibble and wind up walking 5 or 6 and still going an inning or two. You know, the guys that at least keep firing and trying to get through the outing. But that's just baseball, man. Like there's just days where you just don't have it or the lineup's locked in or it's a bad matchup. I mean, there's really no explanation for it. You just got to be good at putting it behind you.
It's so funny. We pick all these. Everybody spends so much time and breath talking about the division races, picking them all before the season starts. Look at the AL standings right now. The Red Sox lead the AL East. The Royals lead the AL Central. Right?
Yeah.
Royals lead the AL Central. The White Sox are 2 games behind the Royals. And the AL West, the Mariners. Your Mariners lead the AL West, and the Angels are second.
Yeah, I mean, that more than anything just emphasizes the point that none of it matters yet. You know, for me, there's so many games left. It'll level out. And, you know, every once in a while, there's a team that jumps off to that hot start. But I felt like when I was with the Braves, the Marlins were in first place in May every year. And, you know, we knew it, the media knew it, the players right. knew it, the fans knew it, that they weren't going to keep it up. And it's just every once in a while you see a team that really turned the corner and they stick with it, you know, and they stay up top. But most of the time it's just, you know, a fluky thing and small sample size.
But if you had picked the Red Sox and the Mariners as two of the first, let's see, four teams to 10 wins.
You would have got some good odds on that bet in Vegas. Yeah.
You're not real confident the Mariners are going to hold off the Angels, but especially the Astros in the division and the Athletics.
But no.
I'll take the Astros in that one. I don't know. Yeah. The Angels might find, you know, Perry, you talk about changing the culture, Perry Minasian. When he went out there, I said he'll do a great job there. People that don't know Perry Minasian don't understand what a baseball guy this guy is and what an incredibly personable guy he is. He could talk to anybody. This is the kind of guy that he could be a salesman, a CEO, whatever Perry Minasian is going to do, he's going to be successful at it because he is one of the more personable dudes I have ever met.
Yeah.
And it's trickling down, you know? You talk to him and you come away going, all right, we're in good hands, boys. This dude knows what it's about. Yeah. He's a guy. He's a dude's dude, but he's also really into the analytics. He embraced it all, you know, but he's old school. He's been around baseball. His dad was a clubhouse manager with the Rangers. So Perry and his brother grew up in a clubhouse, literally, you know, they're four or five years old in the clubhouse. So he's known all the great players. I mean, he's known the Nolan Ryans, the Bo Jacksons, everybody in his life. He's got to know these people and become friends with them. But he
knows how players tick.
Yes. He could talk to players. They love talking to him. And having him as a GM, that was a great move by the Angels. A great move. And people that didn't understand when they hired him, those of us who've had a chance to talk to him and meet him over here, we were like, right away.
Yeah.
Stroke of genius right there doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at any work environment, if the boss is a dickhead, you know, there's employees underperforming that want to quit. And if you go on a baseball field wanting to quit, you're done. You know, there's not a lot of guys. There's some guys that can hate baseball and be negative. Like Adam Dunn talked about how he hated baseball every day.
Yeah.
And then you go hit a homer. You know, I mean, there's some guys that can ride that negative train. But most guys, I mean, your mental state has to be pretty good to perform out there because it's so mentally challenging.
Yeah, and the Braves, they're in good hands with Alex Anthopoulos because you're talking about that work environment. You can't meet a coach in the, you know, obviously the one he let go this winter, but the coaches and the assistants under him, all that, all talk about how he lets them do their jobs.
Yeah,
and that was a problem when Frank was here. You know, say what you want about Frank, he was a smart guy, but people below him didn't like how he micromanaged. People don't appreciate when you feel like you are looking over the shoulders and correcting their mistakes as you see them, or, you know, just not listening to their advice, you know?
Yeah.
They loved Schurholz when he was riding high as the GM here because he delegated duties and all the people under him said they let him do their jobs. And that's what Anthopoulos is really, lets his assistants do their jobs. And the coaches, obviously, he's turned that over to Snit and his coaching staff, and they really appreciate that. So it's important, man. It's so important, a guy you have in that position.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just leadership, you know, and it's you can have a problem with the way somebody's doing something, and there's a million different ways to present it. And some people just choose a blunt, you know, challenging, cutting somebody down when they do something wrong, or you can ask them if they need somebody any help or you know how they're going about it or what their thought process was. And that position of power, you know, I mean, you don't ever want people below you to resent you. You want them to know you have their back. And that's we talk about Bobby Cox all the time, but Bobby never gave me or any player a single negative vibe. He always had your back. He picked you up, and you could give up seven runs the next day. He'd pat you on the ass and tell you, let's go today. You got him. You know, and it's amazing what a difference that makes in your mindset versus when you take the ball. And I had this one manager, I was struggling, but he would hand me the ball like this. I was like, fuck. Well, I know how he feels. But when that's the guy that, you know, you're trying to go out and battle for, you know, I mean, it just sets a negative tone. Yeah, I mean, he'd just hand me the ball and kind of shrug. And I could tell he wasn't excited. It was like, I had to make this move. Yeah. Here you go, dipshit. Yeah, go mess the game up. You know, I have no faith in you. But, you know, when you're pitching with Bobby, you could hear him clapping and yelling your name from the dugout. And it'd be like a reminder that, you know, this isn't about me. I'm trying to get this done for the team. So, I mean, that stuff matters.
Team could have been down 10 runs and you'd hear Bobby in the dugout from the press box. All right, kid, let's go. Let's go, kid.
I got a video of Bobby in a 13-1 game. We're blowing out the Diamondbacks. There's nobody on base. There's two outs. And I throw a backdoor slider to a dude on the Diamondbacks. And it was a check swing and he went. And I got a video. I keep it on my phone just to remind me. Bobby throwing his hat down and yelling at the umpire. You know, I mean, that's just how he was. He always wanted you to do well. But, yeah, I mean, he always had your back.
And Snit learned from at Bobby's knee because he picked up all that stuff. He knows that vibe. The biggest thing is people say about Snit is he knows how hard this game is. He was a player that didn't get very far, didn't get past double A in the minors. Tried so hard, worked so hard, and was so good at the, you know, in college and all that. So then he gets some pro ball in double A and he realizes there's so many guys better than me. This game is hard.
Yep.
Gives you a much better perspective. I think that's the reason why there's so many great managers that weren't great players. They understand.
Yeah, and some guys just, you know, a lot of times it is the better players that didn't happen to go through those struggles. That's why they don't make the best coaches. But, I mean, it's easy, you know. It's easy for me. I can watch a game and be like, that's a stupid pitch. Or, you know, I can watch it now and you just forget how hard the game is and how hard guys are working and trying. But that's probably the most important thing as a manager is to remember how hard it was. So the guys that sucked and didn't make it, you know, it's easier for them.
Talking about that culture with the front office and how important that can be, and people don't understand sometimes how important it can be who the general manager is and the you know, when they get a negative vibe from those guys, the one I'm always reminded of is John Hart, who was a good baseball man. I mean, obviously won in Cleveland and all that. He came over here and things went south, and manager develops a relationship with his players, and if it's a relationship like Snicker has with his players, or like Bobby had with his players. Can you imagine? It would have never happened with Bobby because Bobby would have punched the guy. It would have never happened. A GM would not have come in and chewed Bobby out. He had too much stature. It would not have happened.
Yeah. But
can you imagine if there had been, say, a new GM came in and Bobby was still hanging on at the end and had yelled at Bobby in front of and the players heard that? Can you imagine how the players would have come to Bobby's defense and how pissed off they would have been? Well, it happened with Snit. You know, he's a young manager.
What was the play? What was he mad about?
It was a pinch hit. God, did he pinch hit Matt Kemp? He pinch hit somebody. It was a bad matchup or whatever. And he had made a pitching change like the day before that Hart and Coppola didn't
love. Agree with.
Things were going south, and so they were second guessing him. And it didn't look like Snit had much job security, that kind of thing, you know. And John Hart came into clubhouse in the manager's office, but they could hear this clearly in the clubhouse. And he chews out Snit and he's yelling and cussing. And Nick Markakis is out there and he's all he could do not to go in and fight John Hart. And he told somebody afterwards. You tell John Hart if he ever does that again, I'm going to punch him, you know? And he told somebody to tell John Hart that he said that.
He'd do it too.
You know? So that right there said a lot about the relationship that Snit has with his players, but also how they can lose respect for the people making the decisions. So there's just all this animus building in a clubhouse when things aren't going well. If you don't feel like everybody's on the same page and people are backstabbing and they're not all trying to help each other, you know?
Yeah, you create that finger pointing culture. You know, I mean, you just everybody has this lack of accountability. They're saying it's this guy's fault, that guy's fault. You know, that just, you know, I've talked to guys that were in those bad organizations that felt like they were just punching a clock. And you look at their numbers when they were there and they're down. And then they come over to somewhere else where they're happy and they shoot up because, you know, at the end of the day, it is a game. And you're not going to move the same when you're unhappy or tense or feeling extra pressure. Then there's already so much pressure in the game to begin with. You know, you don't need somebody on your ass. Like, you know, if this is every player's dream to do this their whole life, it's not like they're not going to go out there and try.
Right.
So that added pressure is just not necessary.
And these kind of fights happen all the time between managers and general managers, because that's a high, it's a high tension, it's a tense environment. And if things are going not going well, these are guys making a lot of money and their team's got to win or they're going to get fired. One of them's going to get fired. So this happens all the time. And even with winning teams, it happens, but it happens behind closed doors. It doesn't happen where the players can hear it. You got to be smart about that. Like when I covered the Marlins, Dave Dombrowski and Jim Leland had it out a lot of times, but they yelled at each other because Leland would yell every bit back as much, you know, he wasn't going to back down, but they, that was part of their relationship. And when Dombrowski goes to Detroit, who does he hire? He hires Leland to manage. So it was just part of it, but you just didn't do it in front of the players.
Especially that's another side of leadership too, though, is not taking it personal. Especially you know, let things get heated and tuck it away the next day.
Right. And, you know, Markakis and them had seen Freddie get fired before Snit. They love Snit. He comes in. They love him. He's doing – they love the job he's doing. And then you got the general manager or the president of baseball ops yelling at him. It was just too much, you know.
Yeah,
and but Markakis made it known. And he made
same time, Markakis isn't doing that if Snit's being a dick to guys and blaming them and calling guys out and saying stuff he shouldn't. You know, I mean, it's definitely – you know, it's easier said than done creating that atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah. A couple other things. Chris Martin – He's not throwing yet, man. Or at least he wasn't as of yesterday. It's been a little over a week.
Not a good sign.
Not a good sign, man. I mean, I don't want to read too much into it, but if he's not throwing, I mean, this is a guy that just cannot stay healthy. He's so good when he's healthy, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy for extended periods.
Some guys just have that bug, you know. I mean, that doesn't seem to add up or they don't do anything different than everybody else. Yeah. They're doing all the same workouts. They're pitching the same amount of times and body just can't tolerate it.
And I've always thought there's a reason why there's not a whole lot of 6'7", 6'8" pitchers too, you know?
A lot of exposure hard for those long limbs and ligaments.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. When he said, you know, when he said tingling in the fingers, that can happen on a cold day. Sometimes, you know, your nerve can get a little irritated, but it's going to be something with the nerve, whether it's your UCL is torn and the nerve's kind of wearing the stress or, you know, something else going on. But nerves, man.
Shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's
going all the way down.
That could be – that's that thoracic outlet syndrome is an option for that too, which is no bueno.
Not good. Fulte had that.
Yeah.
Soroka, still a few more days from it. From the end of his 2 week shutdown. So there's nothing to report there yet. He's not throwing yet. But they have high hopes for that. They don't think that was anything serious, just a matter of pushing it when he came back. And like you said, it might end up being a good thing for him. So
I like it.
As long as they have him back by, you know, a little before the All-Star break or so, that's huge for them. Cause he could be such a bonus for them down the stretch. If he can get back to close to 100% the second half.
There's been a few guys getting banged up. It'd be nice to have him, but it's not like last year where you're just riding one dude and desperately help, you know, just needing help. There's a lot of guys that you can, I think Max will turn it around. You know, Charlie's looked good. He's just had that one bad inning. Smiley's hurt too.
Yeah.
Wilson, I didn't think Wilson looked bad last night. You know, I mean, he didn't look great. He hung a couple breaking balls to Rizzo, but he battled. You know,
he settled down real quick too. Yeah. I mean, after that first inning, I thought he showed something, which he's shown a lot of.
He's shown that a lot, and you can count on that with him.
Training too.
Yeah,
he does not get. The floor doesn't fall out from underneath him like it used to.
No,
like it still does with Kyle Wright.
Yeah,
yeah, he showed me something last night, and Enoa. The day before had his first really bad outing that we've seen in a while, gave up 6 runs in 4 innings. But I think he's one of those guys that if one of, like Snit said, he's a 3-pitch pitcher. And if one of those pitches isn't working, the changeup wasn't working, they can narrow it down. It's just hard and hard.
Yeah. His slider wasn't great either. He just, another time, he just pitcher didn't have it. And yeah, if you're a relief pitcher and you don't have it, it's, you know, you get 2 hitters and you're out.
Right.
When you're a starter and you don't have it and there's 5, you know, you're expecting you to get through 5. You go out there and give up 3 in the first or 2 in the first or 4 in the first. And you got to keep trying to go out there and at least get through 3 or 4. And sometimes guys make the adjustment and settle in like Wilson did yesterday. And other times it's not happening and you just wear it.
Freed, they're still hoping he only misses 1 start, and that's because they had 2 off days this week in the schedule. So it's not like he'd be back in 5 days. He's obviously on the 10-day IL, but they only play 8 games in that stretch. So theoretically, you could stick him at the back of the rotation, and he only misses one start technically. But they don't know if that's Snit said. We just don't know yet. He's not. I got a feeling it's going to be a little bit longer than 10 days with him.
Yeah,
with a hamstring. So people thought that was just a convenient way to get him on the IL. No, it was actually a hamstring. I mean, he did it running the bases. You know, it wasn't. If they're going to fake it, they're going to just say, you know, a little soreness in his arm fatigue, whatever. They're not going to make up a hamstring and have him go get an MRI or lie about him going to get an MRI. That just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a guy out of options or somebody that's known to struggle, you know, I mean, I think you ask those questions a lot more.
Right.
But that team wants Fried to turn it around. They would have loved for him to make another start and keep getting opportunities. I'm not as worried about him. He's not a guy I see like just falling off a cliff and, you know, what's wrong with him. And you never get answers. I think he just went through a rough stretch.
Jeff Passan on his podcast pointed out the league-wide batting average in MLB is .233 now, and strikeouts are way up once again. He said the pitching and hitting imbalance is stark. So that's what's weird, though, is then you have outings like we just talked about, you know, that are pitching as bad as ever. I don't know how much of it. I don't know how much has to do with balls. I don't know what it is. I don't know.
I was thinking the balls because they put thicker seams on them. Balls. They said that the seams are a little thicker, yeah, and that's going to give you a better breaking ball. It's going to up the punches, and the ball is going to carry more and ride more when you get those four seams pulling back. So I've kind of thought that when I've seen all those strikeout numbers that, like, look at a guy like Craig Kimbrell. They change the ball, and all of a sudden he's punching everybody out again. You know, I mean, I think that could be a factor.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show. Before we go here, let's talk a little bit about a guy you've met and a subject that you know about, triple A ball, minor league ball, Sean Casimar Jr. This is one of the better stories that we've had in a while here. One of the more uplifting stories. This guy, what he's been through, he came back and played. He got called up or added to the major league roster and called and recalled to the major league team on Saturday, got a pinch hit appearance. The significance of this, it had been over 12 years since his last major league appearance, which was it's been like seven decades since somebody went longer between appearances. It was like longer than Satchel Paige went between appearances. And the difference is he kept playing through the whole time. He was in Triple A the whole time. Since 2013, he's been at Gwinnett, which doesn't happen anymore. You don't have those kind of players anymore in the minor leagues. You know, he's in his mid late 30s now, but he's a guy that is so beloved in the organization. Yeah, he does everything the right way that they've brought him back again and again and again on these minor league deals. And he's still a good player in AAA. And he's so valuable to the organization having him around that they've kept re-signing him. But here's a guy that's been in AAA since he last played with the Padres in 2008, in September 2008. And he and Wade LeBlanc, who's with the Orioles now, are the only two active guys left from the last game he played with the Padres and the Dodgers that had guys like Matt Kemp and Nomar Garcia-Parra and Jake Peavy and Greg Maddux were on those teams. And here he is still playing. And he got a chance to come up and pinch hit Saturday. He's still on the roster. He could play at Yankee Stadium if he's not dropped from the roster before then. An infielder that can play everywhere in the infield and if he has to, he can play the outfield. But just what can you say about a guy that's stuck around, that has that kind of perseverance to live his dream, to get back to the big leagues and he wanted to see his little kids, one and almost 2 years old and 5 years old, wanted to let them see him play in the big leagues. And he's still not done. He said he's going to keep playing.
I'd be Biden, you know, I'd be trying to get that president of used car sales job right now. You know, I mean, I would have been done a long time ago working my way up a new career, because I don't think people understand how difficult and how much harder it is to perform in AAA. You got 4:30 wake-ups for your flights. You probably went to bed at midnight the night before, especially as you start getting older. I mean, it's a freaking grind on your body, especially on your mind. I can't believe he did that. I mean, I'm just shaking my head.
Yeah.
to grind that hard. I mean, you got to love the game on another level. That's good for him, man. I mean, that's an awesome story. It'd be so cool for him to get to play in Yankee Stadium, because this stadium didn't even exist last time he was in the big leagues.
Yeah. Yeah, he was looking at it. He was on the taxi squad for the first trip. Didn't get to play, of course. He wasn't even on the 40. So none of us thought he was going to get to play, to be honest. I mean, he had a great spring, but he's had a great spring the last 3 years. Snit said he's been the MVP of the team the last 3 years. But we just thought he's past the point where he's going to get a chance to play. But they had a couple of injuries, and when Ozzie went down, they're like, you know what? He's on the taxi squad. They got to have somebody from the 5-man taxi squad. Let's add him to the 40 and give him a shot. And his wife and his mother found out. He told them that night, Friday night, after Snit was like almost crying as he told him, because Snit loves the guy.
Oh,
He managed him 2.5 years in Gwinnett. And he's all, and every spring he talks about this Kaz, he has him come back every spring in big league camp. Loves the guy. So Snit was almost ready to cry when he told him Friday night that you're coming up, man. You're playing. So he calls his mom or his wife in Arizona. His wife drops everything. She's at their son's baseball, their 5-year-old son's baseball game. They had in-laws that had just arrived in town. So she says to the in-laws, you've got the kid. I gotta go. Her and her mom and his mom, who also lives in Arizona in Phoenix, they caught a red-eye flight. They're in Chicago for the day game Saturday. They're in the stands with his grandparents, who came down from Milwaukee or from Wisconsin.
That is so cool. They've been waiting years for this.
They said, we're not missing this. There's no way I'm missing this. Got a red-eye flight. And his wife, Jennifer, is a former Arizona State softball player that Sean met when he was in his first instructional league in Arizona, when he was with the Padres. He met her while she was still in school.
She's been down the whole
road. She's the rock of the family, he says. He said she's a saint. They've been married 11 and a half years. She quit her job as a school principal when she had the first kid, because she didn't want to leave the kid with somebody for 10, 12 hours a day while he's gone. She's at work. She quit her job, got an online job, works full-time online for an online university that's allowed her to bring the kids, you know, first one kid, first herself, then one kid, and come to spring training or come to Gwinnett. And she spends the season with him there. They live in an apartment by the ballpark, right next to the ballpark. Now with two kids there, they had one before. And he couldn't do this, he said, without her. I mean, obviously, AAA players don't make much money, as you know.
No, man. I mean, it takes a special wife to go through that. It's so hard. It's so much harder with kids, you know, pulling them in and out of school, traveling to airports, all that stuff with kids. That's when it gets really difficult. And he just keeps going, man. I don't even know what to say, honestly, because I know I don't have that in me. You know, I think I'm a tough guy, but I don't have that in me.
Yeah, everybody's calling him Crash Davis. And he said, yeah, I get that a lot. He goes, but without all the home runs.
Yeah.
But he's hit 12 and 11 home runs two of the last 3 years at Gwinnett. So, and then we saw it spring training. It was like he had 3 homers before anybody else on the team had 2. But no, it's not a home run hitter. He's just a solid all-around player. But he played, you know, he's not like Crash Davis in that he's not taking, you know, the romanticized, the bus rides down these 2-lane rural roads in North Carolina. He's in AAA for all these years. And in AAA nowadays, that means flying in a lot of these places, especially when he was in the PCL for the first half of that period.
PCL's rough.
PCL stretched out basically all over the country back then.
Time zone changes.
He's playing at Tacoma. So they're like driving to Seattle to get a plane ride to Memphis, New Orleans. And they're like not connect, and they're not even direct flights. They're connecting flights. So, and then when he's with Gwinnett, they fly everywhere except they take a bus to Durham and Charlotte, like 3- and 6-hour bus rides, but they fly everywhere else. So, but they're not flying charter like the team, like the Braves are.
You get a middle seat half the time. I mean, a lot of times you're on like Southwest and you get sandwiched in between two people on their laptops or something. Yeah. You know, it's like, I remember when I was in AAA, I saw Barry Zito sit in middle and like he was doing something similar. I was like, this guy's got 160 mil in the bank and he's sitting between two, you know, a mom and her kids in the middle seat in row 37. Like, what is going on? He always called it the jungle. He said, the jungle doesn't care.
Yeah, he said. So I was talking to him about this. And I said, well, what does that involve? Like, what does that entail with flying? Like when he was in the PCL, He's always up in the northern, in the northwest where you live. So they're flying all over the country.
Yeah.
Connecting flights.
There's nowhere close. Only Portland.
Right. And they're traveling the day of the game. It's not like the big league teams fly in charter. They're leaving after the night game, the getaway day.
Going out to dinner.
You're going out to dinner in New York at the new city. Going, let's staying at the Ritz-Carlton. You know,
room service in the morning. Don't
take their own bags anywhere. Everything's done for them.
You don't touch anything.
It's different at
AAA. Oh, AAA, you grab a bag when you get off that bus.
And the hotels are not the Ritz-Carlton. They're not bad, but they're not the Ritz-Carlton. They're like what just normal people stay in.
It could be the Ritz, or I mean, it could be something nice, or it could be, you know, Motel 6. It's whatever is close to the stadium and they get a good deal on. You know, they're not splurging for you.
So at Gwinnett, they're catching a bus to the Atlanta airport. So it's like an hour. They're leaving at 4:30 in the morning sometimes, he said. And they're flying day of the game. So they're leaving at 4:30 in the morning. So that's get up at 3:30 at your apartment. And then they're going to another city, and then they're playing that day.
I know.
He said, I always found that you're okay that day, but you wake up the next day and you're like wiped out. And as you get older, that gets a lot harder.
That's what I'm saying. I can't believe he's doing it. You know, it's not just the games and trying to make it and trying to perform. It's literally like, I remember one time we were in Colorado Springs, and the thing is just, we had a day game, but you're not going to fall asleep at 10 p.m. Because on the baseball schedule, you're used to going to bed at midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., right? Yeah. And then you got a 4 a.m. wake up the next day. Drive your ass to the airport. You know, some guys are lucky enough they can sleep on the planes. You can't sleep on the plane. You get into your city. You got to get to the hotel. You got to do all the bags. And you're also doing, like, you're not getting the bags put straight onto the bus like they do in the big leagues. You're sitting there waiting on them to come around the carousel. You know, maybe there's a bag delay, whatever it is. You get to the hotel at like 2:30. And when they tell you what time you have to be at the park, you just like the air just comes out of you. It's like, bus is leaving at 4, you know, so you get into your room and try to take a nap. You maybe fall asleep for 40, 45 minutes. You wake up feeling even worse because you didn't get enough. Yeah. So you're working on like, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours of sleep and you got a game that night. You got to perform. It counts. Your numbers count. And you're trying to get called up to the big leagues. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The mental stress of that, of trying to perform when you just feel like a bag of crap, you know, it's there's so much working against you. The food sucks. You know, you get a peanut butter and jelly. There's no food on the plane, or maybe, you know, maybe Southwest gave you some calzone or something that they reheated. But you're just battling in AAA. That's why guys come up to the majors and they're so appreciative.
And that's why you loved it when a big league guy comes down at rehabs, right?
Yeah, they buy you. Well, they get Outback Steakhouse, and they think it's like this really nice meal. I feel bad buying that. Like Outback kind of sucks, you know, because you're used to eating such good stuff. But
you buy a
spread, and they get to eat something other than the shepherd's pie the clubby's been throwing out for the last 6 months, and they're fired up. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's just an unbelievable grind to do that year after year after year.
That's what I'm saying.
A smart guy that could go make a lot of money if he wanted to get into another field, you know, and any kind of business or whatever. He can make the connections.
He can make more money doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
he truly loves the game. Yeah. Truly.
You have to.
Love of the game.
I'm jealous of guys like that. I'm jealous of guys that have that ability, you know, to just keep going. It's crazy.
And I was talking to him how, when he retires, he's going to know so many more players than your typical major leaguer does who plays 10, 15 years because they constantly churn the rosters. He's met thousands of guys playing with these teams that have gone through that he's, you know, it's probably literally over 1,000 guys, you know?
Met them on their way up, treated them well.
Met them on their way up.
I look around the league. When I retired, I knew somebody in every lineup that I could just text and hit up and say good game or something like that. And it's just fallen off a cliff. You know, I know less and less guys now, even just after 3 years.
So he's known all these guys coming up since, you know, in through AAA with like three different organizations and then spring training. He's been the last 3 years in spring training with the Braves. So he comes into the clubhouse and he knows almost everybody that he's played with in AAA or that he knows in spring training. So I said, did you get an ovation when you came into the clubhouse? And he goes, well, I got a lot of handshakes and hugs. He goes, but I came up to bat and I looked in the dugout and they were clapping. He goes, that meant so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they appreciate it too. They've all been through that on their way up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you look at how long he's done it, man. You almost something's gotta be wrong with you to be able to tolerate that. You know, I mean, you gotta be special.
Yeah.
Gotta be a little crazy.
So I mean, my hope against hope is that he gets a start in Yankee Stadium would be amazing. I don't think he will, but
I love
at least gets in a bat or two there.
Hit a home run at Yankee Stadium.
God, that would be – then you can make the movie.
He'll cry. He'll cry around the bases, I bet. I mean, that's a dream right there, that especially after everything tremendous. He's been through.
He grounded into a double play, and it was almost like, who cares, you know? But you wish he could do something.
Well, his kids got to see him go out on that field. You know, his one-year-old probably has no clue where he is, but the five-year-old can appreciate what dad's been doing this whole time and sit in a big league stadium. You know, the pictures he's getting after the games with his kids, that they'll have that for the rest of their life. So really cool for him. Really cool.
All right. Well, hey, by the way, we heard we are going to get an update on Acuña today. So nice. I just got a message from a Braves person. One. Yeah. So I would say we'll hold on and keep doing this podcast, but it might be 30 minutes. So that won't work. So we'll be looking on my Twitter feed and on the Athletic site for an update. If it's significant, I'll write something. Otherwise I'll definitely tweet something about what happens. So, but it is coming up. We are going to get an update.
Cool.
All right.
Hope it's
a good
one.
We'll talk to you guys again on Thursday. Yeah, probably Thursday. Yep. All right. And we'll have a Thursday or Friday, maybe after the 2-game series against the Yankees. That's 7:55 is real, and we're out. Thanks.
All right.